This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name's Nicole and I'm from Brisbane in Australia. I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired and had just begun yet another attempt at a non-drinking stint when I discovered the Over the Influence podcasts. The timing couldn't have been better. I binge listened to them all, joined the OTI community and have never looked back. If, like me, you've tried and tried to put down the plonk, but even after some success, keep finding yourself pulled back into the mire, join us in the OTI community, where we all share our stories of what works and what doesn't and where we're currently at. Everyone's just so full of understanding and inspiration. In a few weeks, I'll reach a whole year without a single drop, and I can't thank the OTI community enough. You guys rock and make all the difference in the booze-free world.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. We say it every week because we mean it from the hearts of our bottoms. It's lovely to have you listening. Thank you. Wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey. You might not be alcohol-free. You might still be drinking. You might be sober curious, teetotal, however you want to describe it. It's brilliant that you found us. And thank you for, for listening. We love it. We sing about sobriety week in, week out. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I didn't want to be sober. I didn't want to be alcohol free. A life without booze would obviously be incredibly boring and dull. What a crock of shit that was. Sorry for swearing really early in the episode, but it's because it's true. Took a break from boozing and all this really good stuff started to happen, and really, really big changes. And it's true what they say, life gets better immeasurably once you make that decision to remove booze. Not always easy, but it is certainly always worth it. This September, I will be 5 years alcohol-free, and these days, you couldn't pay me to drink. A little woohoo there from our guest in the corner. Looking forward to chatting. We really, really are. As I said, I'm 49, hurtling towards 50. People say, how much did you drink? How bad did it get? Blah, blah, blah. I drank too much. Too much, too quickly, too often. That is me in a very long-winded, massive nutshell. I don't do this on my own. Ben Anderson, how are you?
Yeah. Shall I keep mine quick, just for balance? I'm Ben. I'm 35. Live in Liverpool. Dad to Gem. No, dad to Leo. Fiance to Gem. You've got me panicked now. You've got me panicked. Yeah. And I am over 3 years alcohol-free. And for me, I was a classic binge drinker. I didn't drink every day. In fact, not even close to drinking every day. But when I did go out, especially kind of big on the weekends, I'd go really big on the weekends. I'd have no off switch. And it just... yeah, the hangovers were lasting for days. I haven't mentioned this for ages, Shaz. I realised because we were talking about consistency and the importance of consistency on one of our Zoom calls this week. And that for me was one of my massive whys at the beginning. And I think now, just because it's kind of part of my everyday, 3 years into this, I'm just kind of like stuff that I used to look at when I first removed alcohol, I kind of now just take for granted. But consistency was a major one for me. The amount of mornings that I'd wake up feeling like crap because of drinking, and I'd cancel whatever plans I had that day and make some excuse. I don't do that anymore because I don't drink anymore. And that's such a major, like, important thing for me that I do what I say I'm going to do. And I've just kind of, it cropped up this week on a call and I thought, yeah, that was one of my major reasons why.
But you know what? I've just got to jump in because even though you say that maybe you don't feel... not as consistent, but it's not like the main driver anymore, that consistency. I can, working with you day in, day out in our Over the Influence community and with this podcast, you are possibly the most consistent person that I know. You really are. You've never let it slip. And every credit to you.
Shaz, we are great. Right, should we meet the guest?
We do this, Stephanie, we do this every single time. We go, right, keep it brief, keep the intro brief. And then we get banging on about alcohol-free life and we get a little bit carried away.
And ourselves.
Yeah, oh, aren't we great and alcohol-free, blah, blah, blah. Stephanie Chivers, it's a delight to welcome you to Over the Influence. How are you doing, first of all?
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm good, thank you.
Excellent stuff. And thank you for waiting so patiently while we sort of bleated on through our very long-winded intro there. Stephanie, tell us a little bit about you. Whereabouts are you based in the world and what do you do? What do you get up to?
Okay, do you want the short version before we get really stuck in?
Yeah, let's do that first.
And then before we go into it. I am a coach and a trainer and I'm based down in Plymouth at the moment, but I'm quite transient. I do love to wander. I'm a bit of a wanderer. A lot of the work that I do is online anyway. So I work with people around the world. A large part of what I do is about behaviour change. And that just turns out that it tends to be a lot of people who want to reduce, take a break, or stop drinking. And I've been pretty much doing that for the last 17 years.
Wow.
In many, many different sort of guises. At the moment, the current carnation is I'm director of a little community interest company called Women Who Don't Drink. But essentially, it's been, no matter what my job's been or where I've been doing it, the same stuff, people and behaviour change.
Amazing. And of course, it's, alcohol free is a big thing that you talk about. But it's not just that, is it, Stephanie? You are an expert in all sorts of different kinds of substances because I have been trained by you. It was one of my favourite days on the course that Shaz is now doing with Andy Remage and Arete Way. It's kind of a passion of yours, isn't it, Stephanie?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of what I talk about is about alcohol because I think that's our loudest noise at the moment, I would say, around sort of behaviour change and reducing and stuff like that. And also alcohol's fascinating, as you know, isn't it? Like alcohol as a drug is fascinating. It's legal, it's socially acceptable, it's readily available, it's aggressively marketed to us. You know, heroin isn't, cocaine isn't. So the illegal drugs, though I can absolutely work with them, and I do, you know, I work with people that use different substances, but the bulk of what I do is around alcohol. I just think there's something really interesting about the fact that alcohol is legal and how people perceive it, yet it is, I'm happy to argue, our most harmful substance.
As a previous podcast guest, Professor David Nutt got fired from his role in government for a few years ago. Why do you think that, Stephanie? That's really interesting. So you're throwing it out there, alcohol is the most harmful substance to British society?
Yeah, so most professionals in my field will argue that the top three most harmful substances are alcohol, heroin and cocaine. And when we look at harm, and it's quite hard for me to answer this question without causing some controversy, because it's an 8-hour answer, really, as you know, because you've done part of the training with me. It's not a quick thing to answer. So when people look at harm, they're looking at also legal harm. So heroin and cocaine are illegal drugs. So a huge part of the harm caused by heroin and cocaine is purely because they're illegal drugs. It's not net. I mean, gosh, here we go. I'm going to get myself into trouble. So alcohol is legal, but the trouble with alcohol is it's a toxin. It's a poison. So when we ingest it in significant quantities, and we can't quantify the significant because it's different for everybody, it literally impacts on every part of our body. So we drink alcohol, it goes into our stomach, it goes into our bloodstream, which is every part of our body. So it's not like everybody that drinks is going to have liver problems, everybody that drinks is going to have pancreatitis. It's not that. You know, you could have problems with your eyes, problems with your skin, problems with your stomach. A lot of it is down to your genetics and your lifestyle as well. And that's before we start talking about behavior and money and relationships and mental health and all the other stuff that goes with alcohol. So it's a very harmful substance. Whereas heroin, if you were to smoke good quality heroin for the rest of your life, that won't kill you. There we go. That's where you're going to get all the controversial stuff. Now, people don't like it when I say that because they're like, oh, heroin's really bad and it kills you and da-di-da-di-da. But when we start talking about heroin, I'm not talking about injecting drug users. Obviously, injecting is really harmful. It's our most harmful route of taking a drug. But heroin itself as a substance, if you knew what you were taking, the quality of it, and you were smoking it, it's not going to kill you. Whereas alcohol, if you drank daily for a period of time, it's going to either kill you or harm you physically or emotionally or all of it.
First of all, that's nuts. Just straight up, that as a fact is completely and utterly bonkers.
Yeah.
Secondly, I love that you just come out and say it, Stephanie. Like, you just like, this might piss some
and
people off.
And here we
off.
Go.
Oh, God, piss everybody off that one. I did a post back along and it was like, because it's difficult. It's difficult to do this on a podcast. Like you've done the training with me. And really, even an 8-hour training day is just the tip of the iceberg. Really, I want people for 8 weeks so I can go into detail, because people will hear, Stephanie just said that heroin is safe. That's not what I said. I said a very specific thing about harm. Of course, you know, if you use any drug regularly, there might, you know, that is going to impact on your life. I was just being very specific about a very small part of it.
What's really interesting as well is that, you know, conversations and discussions are always drugs and alcohol. Drugs,
yes,
and alcohol. The two are still referred to,
yep,
as completely separate entities. When you began, yep, chatting, you talked about alcohol being the most harmful drug.
Yeah, it drives me nuts, because if I said I'm a drugs worker, I'm a drugs practitioner, people would assume that I only work with illegal substances like heroin and cocaine and ketamine. They would exclude alcohol from what I'm doing. And I think that's a very clever part of, I have no idea where that comes from, and it'd be lovely to do some research on that, because we say alcohol and drugs. Now, I say alcohol and drugs because I want people to understand that I work with alcohol, but really I should just be saying drugs. But that's something that's happened way, 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 way a long time ago. And it's part of what's clever about the split, because one of my favourite conversations, not that it happens much these days, but I'd be in a bar somewhere, you know, and I'd be drinking a lime and soda or whatever, and somebody would have a glass of wine in their hand, and they'd ask me, you know, what I do for a job, and depending on what mood I'm in or whether I'm ready for a debate, I'll tell them what I would do in whatever detail, and they'll be like, oh God, yeah, I'd never take drugs, never take drugs. Oh, terrible business that is. And people would launch into a very judgmental sort of, you know, conversation about drug users are bad, drugs are bad. And I would just let them sort of do their thing with their glass of wine in their hand. And then I'd be like, so you don't take drugs then? And they'd be like, no, I would never do that. Okay, so what's that then? Oh, that's a glass of wine. That's not a drug. I'm like, yeah, it is. It is. And it's our most harmful drug. Yeah, but that's different, isn't it? It's not. You are a drug user.
And you know what? I think if society viewed it like that, I think a lot more people would definitely feel more conscious about what they were drinking.
Yeah.
For sure. Because you're right. It's that kind of, and it's almost the same stereotyping, isn't it? That it's the alcoholics wake up on park benches having lost everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's that same kind of societal narrative. In terms of harm then, Stephanie, can we define harm? Because obviously there's harm to the individual.
Yeah.
And you've talked about that controversial heroin example, but you're not just talking about physical or mental harm to the individual when we talk about alcohol harm, are we?
No, there's the legal harm, there's the harm to the individual, there's the harm to community. Yeah, so physical, that harm to yourself, sort of physical and emotional harm, short term and long term, because obviously, you know, when you go out, a binge drinker potentially may get into some trouble in the short term. It's not just about the long-term physical and mental health impact, it's about the short term as well.
Like alcohol poisoning, for example.
Yeah, well, lots of things. So, you know, accidents. So when people are under the influence, when they drink too much, they do things that they wouldn't normally do.
Climb scaffolding, jump across canals.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Accidents, you know, people can really hurt themselves or die, you know, fights, stuff like that, unprotected sex, you know, sexual encounters that you wouldn't normally do, STIs, unwanted pregnancies. I mean, there's just unlimited things that can happen on a night out when you drink too much, as well as overdose and alcohol poisoning. Because if you drink too much alcohol in one go, it can kill you. And we do see that. We tend to see it happen more with younger people, so in university, stuff like that. But it does still happen, you know, as people get older, sort of stag do's, hen do's, things like that. And again, there's no set amount. You know, we could go out for the night and drink the same amount but each one of us would have a different, you know, different impact, definitely.
I saw an awful story today. I don't know if it was on the social media or one of the news pages, Stephanie. And it was a guy, I think, on a Caribbean island somewhere. I've not got the actual specifics of it. I'll have to look it up after this episode. And it was something like, I don't know if it was the 12 cocktail challenge or the 24 cocktail. It was a cocktail challenge. The guy died.
Yeah.
It's horrific. So what started out as, hey, this sounds great, fun, we're on holiday in the sunshine, let's do this.
Yeah.
He went back to his hotel room and he died. It doesn't get any worse. And you read things like that and you think, oh, dear God.
Yeah, but there are so many deaths attributed to alcohol, not just that. And I personally, professionally, it's not just personal, professional. So what I've seen, so I haven't worked in services since 2017. However, if I was a betting woman, I would bet that it hasn't really changed that much in that period of time. And how we used to collect data for alcohol deaths, I can tell you that that information is not correct. 100% that information is not correct. So although it says something like 8,000 or 9,000 deaths a year attributed to alcohol, I know for working in treatment services that they are not collecting those numbers correctly. And that's just from the information we get in treatment services. And I think the estimate is something like, it's more like 35,000.
Wow.
Yeah, because of the way they record this stuff. You know, I used to know, so when people died, which was quite often within alcohol treatment services, you know, you'd be working with people and if somebody died, we would be informed. And obviously we'd have to do our due diligence to make sure that we'd done our job properly, quite rightly so. Quite often on the death certificate, there would be no mention of alcohol when we knew that person was a chronic drinker. And actually the reason for their death was definitely about alcohol. So there's a lot of stuff we miss.
And is the reason for that, that, so for example, we know that drinking alcohol, excessive alcohol, can increase your risk of breast cancer.
Yep.
Is that because if somebody died of breast cancer, the cause of death would be breast cancer? Is that what you mean in terms of the unrecorded? We're not attributing, yes, that death may have been directly because of alcohol consumption, but we're not attributing it to the alcohol. We're attributing it to the kind of the what happened, what the illness was.
Yeah, although that's slightly different. So yeah, alcohol definitely increases your cancer risk. And they're getting much better at being more vocal about that. You're seeing more stats about that and more research. However, that's slightly harder to quantify, maybe, because, you know, I may never drink but still get breast cancer. And I might drink lots and never get breast cancer. So there's more stuff around sort of strokes and heart attacks and pancreatitis and liver and stuff like that, you know, where it is blatantly obvious, you know, somebody's very unwell, but they do, public health do a lot of, you know, data analysis around this, definitely.
Shaz, have you seen that Aaron, one of our community members who's watching tonight's recording, has put in the chat box, Staffordshire man dies after attempting all 21 cocktails on menu on a Jamaican holiday, aged 53.
It's horrendous.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that dreadful? Because, you know, Stephanie, what you were saying there about stag do's and hen do's, like, yes, they are kind of like classic, let's get ridiculously drunk. I mean, I had my stag do recently, Stephanie, and we went camping because I didn't want to be in some, you know, insert European city here and watching everyone else get drunk while I stay there sober because I don't drink. So I decided to do something completely different. And you know what? All the lads loved it. But, you know, this guy, he had, Aaron's just putting some more information here. He managed 12 of the cocktails. So it was 12 and that's what, and yeah, 53 years old. Like, that's no age, is it?
It's horrible. Like, it's the worst.
Absolutely. It's really interesting to talk about all this stuff. And I know that we need to talk about your personal story as well, Stephanie, because you've got an incredibly interesting personal story. But just kind of on the harm side of things, one of the things that really shocked me, actually, just if we're talking about that drugs and alcohol and linking those two things currently separate, maybe we shouldn't separate them. One of the things that really shocked me is that you do a really good part of that training about dependence, physical dependence. That's something I really want to talk about in more detail because I think that it's a, you know, obviously we talk about removing alcohol, we did it a few, we talked about it a few weeks ago. Was it last week we had Drew on the podcast in Australia? And we were talking to him about removing alcohol, and he was in a drummer in a rock band and drinking, you know, huge amounts of booze. And whenever we feel like we have to, we give that kind of, oh, and by the way, if you feel like you might be physically dependent on alcohol, then don't just remove it because it can kill you. In your training, cocaine doesn't. So let's say that you drink alcohol excessively and you do cocaine excessively. If you stop drinking alcohol and your body is physically dependent on it, that could kill you.
The withdrawal could kill you.
If you stop the withdrawal could. Yeah. Withdrawal from cocaine doesn't.
No, that's right. Well, there wouldn't be a withdrawal.
That really shocked me.
Yeah. But that's sort of going back to, we need an 8-hour or an 8-week training day because cocaine sits.
So you're coming back on next week is what you're saying, Stephanie. For the next 8 weeks, we've got you on the podcast.
The whole of a thing. Because cocaine sits in the category of stimulant drugs, and stimulant drugs are not physically addictive drugs. So essentially, you know, if you use cocaine every day and you stop suddenly, you might feel a bit crap because you've been using cocaine and the impact of that on you and maybe how your lifestyle's been around sleep and food and mental health, but you are not going to have a physical withdrawal. Whereas with alcohol, if you drink daily or in a binge, that's the important bit to remember as well. And again, we can't give exact amounts. So the type of thing that, as a general guide, I say for women, 18 units, which looks like two bottles of wine. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're drinking less than that, there is a possibility a very small number of women might still have a physical dependency, but it's highly unlikely. I've only ever come across it once. And you could potentially be drinking 18 units as a woman and not have physical dependency, but I would still want somebody to have a thorough assessment. And for a man, it's about 24 units, and the same applies. So 24 units looks like about, you know, between 10 and 12 cans of lager, depending on the percentage. And again, it's unusual for a man to be drinking less than that and have a physical dependency. And there are men that drink that amount and do not have a physical dependency. But if you stop suddenly and you experience sweating, shaking, anxiety, paranoia, hallucination, you know, your body's really sweating, whole body shakes, psychosis, potentially fits, then in some cases that can be fatal and people do die sometimes in the withdrawal. So what we always talk about is, you know, because quite often people have had enough. You must hear this a lot. You know, people are like, I'm done. I've had enough drinking. I'm just going to stop. You know, and I do the assessment and I'm like, what? I recommend a reduction. You know, this is what that might look like. No, I'm not doing that. And you can give them all the advice. And I just say to them, okay, well, if you do that and you start sweating and shaking, you have to have a drink to manage your withdrawals, you know, and then come back to me and reduce slowly. But the other thing that sometimes people miss, which is really sad because they think I'm not a daily drinker, is when people are binge drinkers. So if they drink over a period of days, like they get on it and they're partying, and then, you know, because they're binge drinkers, they stop, go to work on Monday. Day two, day three, they start withdrawing because of the amount that they've consumed over a period of time. So as you know, I'm a massive fan of education and information. I want people to know that it's physically dependent, that the risks of withdrawal, what withdrawal looks like. But I also want people to know about alcohol poisoning, like if you drink too much in one go, that's a risk as well, because I do think a lot of people don't know this stuff.
Can we talk a little bit more about that? And I realise this entire episode is back to front today. Normally, we'd get your story, Stephanie, and we're not going to let you go before you share that with us on the episode, but we've gone straight in. And it's fascinating stuff. Just talk a bit more about alcohol withdrawal and that physical dependency and the actual real danger that can come with that if you don't get the treatment that you need.
Yeah, the trouble with it is there's so many factors involved when we do the assessment, and that's why I do the training, because it's not as simple as counting your units. You know, there is so, you know, it can take anything between 30 minutes and an hour for me to do a proper assessment. And even sometimes then I might be like, do you know what? I need to take professional advice on this. I'll come back to you before I make a decision. But, you know, it's not just about the amount that they're drinking. It's how they drink, how long they've been drinking, have they had any periods alcohol-free, you know, what medication are they on, you know, how's their mental health, how's their physical health, you know, there's so many factors involved in this before we start giving advice. The key bit is for most people, I mean, if you've got epilepsy, you have to be incredibly careful with this because of the fits. But for most people, you know, if you are drinking and you, when you stop, you experience withdrawal, so you start drinking again, to reduce by one unit a day is quite a safe way to do it on your own. However, I much prefer people to have a proper assessment. But I always come, you know, and you will have heard this as well. People will be listening to this and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I was drinking 3 bottles of wine a day and I just stopped and I was fine. And it's like, okay, great. That's great. You were lucky. But we don't know that. You don't know that that's going to happen for someone else. I was drinking 2 bottles of wine a day and the weekends drinking way more. And when I stopped, I just stopped because I didn't know any of this stuff. I was actually very unwell. I mean, I was okay. I went through that first week of withdrawals and I was lucky.
And in terms of alcohol poisoning, how do you define that? Because, you know, I don't know if I've ever had alcohol poisoning by the clinical definition, but I know I feel like I've nearly been poisoned by alcohol many, many times over the years. Like, actually, physically, I think I'm going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. And have you ever thrown up?
Oh, God, I was, I'm going to say this out loud and please don't judge. Yeah, many times. And for me, a lot of it would be a tactical chunder to make way for more alcohol, which is a horrible thought. I was always very, very sick before, during and after. Yeah, it was horrendous.
Well, that's alcohol poisoning. Your body is saying, I don't like this, get it out. It's a toxin. Oh. So, you know, although throwing up's a good thing, that's essentially what's happening. You've drank too much and you've poisoned yourself.
Like, talking about this stuff, it's over 3 years ago since I had my last hangover, Stephanie, and thank God, you know, don't miss them. You do kind of wonder how much of it is hangover and how much of it is kind of mild withdrawal. You know, in terms of some of the stuff you're talking about, kind of sweaty, hot, bit shaky, like, you know, I honestly don't think that I was physically dependent on alcohol when I removed it, because I didn't have major symptoms. But just talking about that kind of, you know, those symptoms of withdrawal, I definitely, I don't know, was it like, and it would last longer.
Yeah.
Like the older I got, the longer this hangover would last. Is it a hangover? Is it like, how much of this do we, because it's not like, you know, yes, I was going out and I was binge drinking, but I was doing it with everyone else.
Yeah.
They were all doing it. We're all getting the shots together.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I might have drunk the beers a bit quicker than everybody else and might have been ordering a few more beers. But we were all, you know, it wasn't like I was sticking out like a sore thumb. This wasn't like a weird, bloody hell, Ben goes for it every time we go out, you know, and we'd all have that same hangover the next day. But was it?
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely. So it's essentially because of the way alcohol works on our body and our brain. You know, for some people, when you drink a bottle of wine, you will experience anxiety and sweating, you know, as your body processes that alcohol. And that's like a mini withdrawal. So, yeah, absolutely. That's definitely what's happening for some people, you know. Hangover is like you say, more like the headache and stuff like that. But the sweating and the handshaking, you know, that's that first sort of
anxiety. Lots of people say that.
Interestingly, anxiety is one that gets missed quite a lot. So what happens is, we know that alcohol increases, causes and exacerbates anxiety. But it's a bit of a perfect storm as well with it, because people with anxiety will drink to get that relief from the anxiety, but actually it's making the anxiety worse, because you're going to have worse anxiety as your body processes it and withdraws from it. So what can happen is, when people are trying to be alcohol-free, like day two, day three, their anxiety is off the scale. That's withdrawal, you know, because they're struggling. They're like, oh, God, I've got to have a drink because my anxiety is so bad. And if it's happening, I would want that person to go and see their GP and talk about medication and options to help with their anxiety, so they're not caught in this loop. And that's something that gets missed a lot, because people are like, oh, I've just got anxiety. It's like, maybe. But maybe this is withdrawal. So let's get you some help so this isn't so horrendous. Let's get you a couple of weeks alcohol-free, maybe 3 weeks alcohol-free, and see how you feel. Because most people, even a bit stretch of time of being alcohol-free, will feel so much better and the anxiety just won't be there. I mean, some people will because they have a pre-existing problem around anxiety. But even then, you still need to remove the alcohol because you can't figure out what the anxiety is about and then get the support for that if you're drinking, because it just all becomes about the alcohol. So it's really important if you're struggling with anxiety.
Just talking about this, just bringing back some awful, horrendous memories of hangovers and probably alcohol withdrawal. I never, ever, ever, ever want to experience alcohol poisoning again as long as I live.
No.
It's just truly shocking. No.
Do you know what? You do that to yourself. You actively choose to do it.
Yeah.
And you pay for it.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Like, it's nuts.
Don't. Oh, it's making me sweaty and anxious just even talking about it. Stephanie, that is just so interesting. And we need a whole other episode on this, because I think, like you say, we do need 8 hours to chat. I'm really conscious that we've not even spoken about your story yet and what led you into this world of recovery, Stephanie. Have we got time to hopefully summarise and just delve a bit into your personal life, if you don't mind?
Yeah, of course. But before I do that, just one point. So if anybody's listening and they're really fascinated, because like you just said, like 8 hours, even 8 hours is the tip of the iceberg. And I say that to people when I'm training them, you know, it's like the ongoing supervision and ongoing training. And I'm 17 years in, I'm still learning. So if you're really interested in this, best book is Drink by Professor David Nutt. And it will go into detail about the brain chemistry and withdrawal and all that lovely juicy stuff. If you're interested, that's the best way to get the facts on it.
But let's give your stuff a plug as well, Stephanie, because we can watch you talking about this, can't we, online?
I tend to talk more sort of generally around, you know, how people feel when they're drinking and the benefits of reducing and a behaviour change. I tend to talk a lot about that, not necessarily the science, because I'm a coach and a therapist. I'm not a scientist.
And a fellow of, what's your really strong title, Stephanie?
A fellow of the Royal Society of Public Health, just in recognition of my years of service. And
it's so good.
Done some pretty swanky jobs. So yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
We are just going to take a very quick break from this fabulous episode. Really, really enjoying chatting to Stephanie. Loads more to come as well. Back with Stephanie very, very shortly. Before we do, we just wanted to let you know that there are still a handful of places left on our big Ben Nevis adventure, which is taking place in the beautiful area of Fort William, because that's where Ben Nevis is. And it's all starting on Friday, the 25th of August, running through until Sunday, the 27th. So we arrive on the Friday, we climb and hike to the top of the UK's highest mountain on the Saturday, and then we all go home feeling very, very chuffed with ourselves on the Sunday. If you'd like any further information about that, just drop me an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. We've got this event that's happening at the back end of August, like I've just said, and then we've got two more taking place this year. I think we will have done half a dozen, eight maybe, events this year. They're so, so good. In the main, people come on their own and they get in touch and go, can I come by myself? And like, yes, of course you can. Absolutely you can. It can be a lonely road sometimes, choosing to remove alcohol and sort of navigating trips like this, getting involved in a sober community, thinking, can I go up a mountain with these randoms that I've never met before? Yes, you absolutely can. The events are brilliant. It's all about connection, inspiration, motivation and friendships, to be honest. And we've seen some amazing friendships blossom on our community events, and they are just ace. Must add in as well, we do this properly. This isn't me and my mobile phone going, come on, everybody, this way. Let's get to the top of Ben Nevis. We bring in fully qualified guides. We do it properly. All health and safety assessed and all that jazz. And it's going to be a cracker. Last year, we did Snowdon. Earlier this year, we ticked off Scarfell. So that's Wales' highest mountain, England's highest mountain. And we are going to go out with a bang this summer and tackle Ben Nevis, which is the UK's highest mountain. So, like I said, handful of places left. If you want any further information or if you want me to allay any worries that you might have, no question is too daft. Ping us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Right, enough about Ben Nevis. Let's get back to the episode with Stephanie.
So my personal story, I'll try and keep it short because that could be another 8 hours. similar to most people my age, just teenage experimentation, not understanding anything about alcohol, then sort of grew up in the sort of rave generation. So that very quickly changed to sort of cannabis and ecstasy and amphetamine and acid and mushrooms. And, you know, that was very much sort of the drugs of choice for our peer group because of the music that we were into. And alcohol just wasn't really a thing. You know, it sort of started with alcohol and I never drank, you know, there was no, I say normal experimentation, but it was binge drinking, passing out, throwing up, you know, accidents, all that type of stuff as classic sort of teenage stuff. And then with the drug use, yeah, that took me on a whole other different sort of tangent. But then at some point, you know, the alcohol crept in, like it just does, because it's just part of society. And interestingly, because our background had been drugs and sort of harm reduction, you know, not that I can't say that any of us ever did it safely. I think we tried to, but, you know, looking back on it, it was that weird balance between recreational and problematic. And then switch to the alcohol and very slowly, that did not suit me, shall we say. I'm not a nice drunk. I'm the sort of person that really needs to not drink for so many different reasons. So what would happen with me is I would drink and not have an off switch. And it was more about my behavior and impact on my mental health. And if you look at pictures of me around that time, I looked fantastic. You know, there was no sort of impact on how I looked or my physical health. There was no weight gain. I had no stomach problems. It was purely about the amount I was drinking and then the behavior, putting myself and others at risk while I was under the influence in quite an extreme way, which culminated in an arrest 2 days before Christmas, full cliche, with my children at home. So I was released on Christmas Eve. But what was amazing about that, so literally the worst day of my life, also the best day of my life, full cliche, was once I'd sorted myself out, because I was using drugs as well as drinking at the time. And in fact, I'd just picked up drugs and I dropped them off. So I'd literally got arrested just after that. Otherwise, it would have been a lot worse. It was just an alcohol-related offence. It could have been alcohol and drugs. It took me quite a while to calm down. I was lucky that the arrest got out of control. I was lucky that it wasn't any worse than it was. And probably about 10 hours into custody, after I'd sort of realised they weren't letting me out, I was like, how did I get here? You know, I'm a, 34, 35, I can't remember, woman. I've got a good job, project manager of charity, I own my own house, I've got two beautiful children. Like, what happened? And it was just like this, like, where you see your life flash before you. And I just realized that I was the common denominator. So everything that had gone well, I was there. Everything that had gone wrong, I was there. And I just had this total, like, epiphany of, like, oh my God, I'm 100% responsible for my life. I'm 100% responsible for this moment in my life. I did this. I created this. I got myself here. And literally when I came out of custody, I was looking at a 3-month prison sentence, which frighten the living daylights out of me. But I was like, I'm never going to drink or take drugs ever again. That's going to be my first thing that I'm going to do. And then I that's where I started. I vowed to sort my life out, and I left a trail of destruction behind me. So it was not an easy feat. You know, I didn't stop drinking and my life was wonderful. It wasn't like that. It took years and years and years for me to deal with the mess that I'd created. And I just got lucky as well. I don't believe in luck. It wasn't premeditated. You know, I just started doing some therapeutic training, which was hilarious, at about the same time I got arrested, but the trainer had totally got my number. I'd asked him for help. He helped me. And as through my therapeutic training, you know, I fully engaged with that, with my own process as well. So it was like doing my own therapy as well as training. And then I got a thirst for personal development, and I wasn't really thinking about, oh, I'm going to do this for one day. I wasn't. I was just like, oh my God, this is nuts. So I need to keep learning this stuff. Like, it was just, I felt like it was really helping me and helping me improve my life. It was really important. And there are a number of different things that happened along the way. So there was a job that came up as a young person, substance misuse worker in a secure unit. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go for that. I didn't really have the background or experience apart from the therapeutic qualification at that point. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was the only person that went for that job. And they didn't want to give it to me because I had a criminal record. You know, they were just like, you've got a criminal record for an alcohol-related offense. I'm not sure about this. This is a really difficult job. You know, there was a whole like hoo-ha about it. And I think what happened, well, I sort of learned, became obvious later on. So in treatment services, you get given funding and then you have to fulfill on the contracts. Now, if you can't recruit, you can at once or twice, you can be like, oh, we're struggling to recruit, but then you need to recruit and you need to deliver on the contracts. Otherwise, you're going to lose the funding. So I think they were at a crux point where they're like, this is the only person that's gone for the job. We've not been able to recruit before. We're going to give her a crack. We're really not happy about this. So I got the job and I smashed it. Like, I literally 2 years, like, did a bloody amazing job. It was also a really difficult job, you know, really, really difficult working in a secure unit. And then because it's all temporary contracts, it just bounced around and did whatever job came up. So I've done pretty much every job in treatment services since then, you know, drug and alcohol worker, team leader, group worker, and person's outreach worker, family worker, set up a family service, ran 3 different treatment services. 2 were alcohol specific, worked on the Making Every Adult Matter stuff, the complex client stuff, run homeless shelters, you name it, I've done it, sort of around drug and alcohol treatment and mental health and housing and complex clients, and loved every minute of it until it was like, contracts weren't working, you just couldn't make it work anymore. So I left, and that's when I started doing my own stuff. But yeah.
Because you're 100% responsible for your own life. I love that phrase, Stephanie. That's so, I mean, just quickly on that, like, when you realised that, when you had that moment, I'm 100% responsible for my own life.
Yeah.
Was it liberating? Was it terrifying? Was it a bit of both?
No, it felt, it's going to sound weird, it felt powerful to me. Like, so one of the reasons why, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've got loads of friends that do 12-step. I don't care how you get there. You know, whatever methodology you choose, it makes no difference to me. But 12-step language didn't work for me. I've never called myself an addict. I don't say I'm in recovery. I never said that I was an alcoholic. I don't have a disease. You know, I'm a human being that used substances problematically and created chaos. And then I took responsibility for that, full responsibility, and I've changed as much as I possibly can to improve my life. So for me, like, because 12-step is like, you are powerless over your addiction. I was like, no way. I am powerful and I get to create the life that I want to live.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, what a story.
Yeah, and there's loads more to it than that.
Oh, I know, and I'm really conscious. We've got like 5 minutes left to chat. So let's take it then right up to present day. We're going around in all sorts of back to front orders here. We've done it differently today.
Yeah, it is different, but it's kind of, I think, just the your expertise.
Yeah.
Like you are so, and as soon as you start with something like, well, and obviously heroin isn't as bad as alcohol, however you phrased it earlier, I can't remember. Like, as soon as you start with something like that, it's like, well, we've got to follow that thread. We've got to go there.
Oh, it's, yeah, just absolutely fascinating to chat, and nobody better place to be doing what you're doing now, because it's that lived experience, isn't it, that everybody talks about. What do you do now, Stephanie? Let's take it up to 2023. What do you do now? Because you mentioned you're a community interest company.
Yeah, so we've got a little community interest company, and we've been fairly low-key. We've done lots of different things, but where we're focused on now is very much about growing our group, because we've been in many different incarnations. We've been going for about 8 years, and I believe we have a model that works in terms of supporting people to reduce, take a break, or stop drinking, that's accessible, confidential, and affordable, which is really important to me. It's important to me that, well, everyone, not just women, although most of what I do is about women, have somewhere to go that is, you know, that speaks their language, essentially, and is available to them, but doesn't cost the earth. So we do a lot of work around sort of group support with that, really, and a bit of mentoring as well. And then very quietly, I don't really talk about it a lot, we do, you know, bits and pieces around education and training and supervision and support, because, as you know, alcohol-free is incredibly popular now, which is amazing and it's fantastic. And then people train and they want to be coaches. So a huge part of what I do, but I don't necessarily talk about it, is supporting, you know, the new up and coming sort of people.
And it's so important to get it right, though, isn't it? Because of the nature of what we're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, it is important to get it right, but I don't want that to put them off. I mean, obviously, alcohol is massively high risk. It is massively high risk. But if you're passionate about doing this work, then we need you. You know, there are lots of people that are drinking, and it's not an easy place to work in. You know, I've been here for 17 years, but that's rare. You know, people come in and they do their bit and they move on, and quite rightly so. If it's too much for you, go do something different. You know, it can be a heavy place to work. So I want to support and encourage people coming in, definitely, to make sure that they've got a space to come to and talk to and ask questions and just be like, is this okay? Isn't this okay? You know, that type of stuff.
Amazing. You've done that for us, Stephanie, over the influence.
Yeah.
We've done some work with you. And I think it's, you're right, you know, it can be heavy at times, but that's, I don't know. Like, what I love about what you do is that you are, you know, you're very open to collaboration and working with loads of different people, because that's how you change this, isn't it? That's how you actually genuinely make an impact. It's not necessarily about the work that you do, but it's about the work that empowers other people around you. Like, we talk about that so much over the influence. Like, the reason that we exist is, you know, the big mission is to normalize sobriety as a positive lifestyle choice. But actually, it's about helping the individual to feel happily and confidently alcohol-free. Yeah. That's what our community does for people. People join and they feel lonely and a bit scared and a bit nervous and a bit weird that they want to remove alcohol from their lives. After a few months, they feel that they've made a positive choice. They don't feel lonely and weird anymore because they're surrounded by other, well, okay, yeah, all slightly weird.
Slightly weird people in our community.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, weird and wonderful. But, you know, it's that kind of, and we don't force people to go out and shout about it from the rooftops. So we're not saying, you know, go and, you know, we do a podcast. We're not saying that everyone should go out there and, you know, wear it on their sleeve and, you know, every turn, every conversation should be about alcohol-free life. But what we hope that we're doing as part of the community is giving people that kind of confidence, so that if someone does approach them and says, like, what? Why have you given up drinking then?
Yeah.
Rather than doing that kind of, I'm really sorry. I'm not drinking today. I'm just, you know, apologetically kind of tips. They go, you know what? Yeah, I did remove alcohol and it's been bloody great for me. And it's having those conversations. It's about the impact, isn't it? It's about what you can kind of knock on and affect.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going off on one now, Shaz. Come on, bring it back in.
Nice, right. Come on. Neat bow on the top. We are out of time. Stephanie, thank you. That has absolutely flown. It's been fascinating and it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Just before you go, let people know where they can find you if they want further information about what you do.
Yeah. So womenwhodon'tdrink.com is the website for the group. And there's also a free ebook on there as well. And you can contact us through there. But if, you know, you can email me too. I'm on Facebook and Instagram messages. So I'm around stephaniechivers@hotmail.co.uk. So always happy to take questions.
Stephanie, you are a lovely, lovely woman. Thank you so much for your time and Over the Influence.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely fantastic stuff. We say it, don't we? Week in, week out. This podcast is all about the guests, and Stephanie Chivers was another fantastic guest. Thank you so much for your time, Stephanie. We really, really did enjoy chatting. If you'd like to find out more about Stephanie's work, or indeed if you'd like to get in touch with her, finding out if she could support you maybe as a coach, just get in touch with us Over the Influence and we will point you in Stephanie's direction. As always, our email is otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Before we go today, just a quick reminder about our OTI events. We've still got just a handful of places left on the summer big one. This is taking place at Bank Holiday weekend here in the UK. So from Friday, August the 25th until Sunday the 27th, accommodation is included, most of your food, transport to and from the mountain, not up it, you've got to walk that bit. What else is included? Fully guided. Yes, that's what I needed to say. It's absolutely fully guided. Ben isn't coming on this one because he's having a risk-free August, something to do with the fact that he gets married the week after Ben Nevis. So we'll give him this one. So it will be me, a load of our amazing community members, and of course it's fully guided by people that are qualified and know exactly what they are doing. We did Snowdon last September. It was superb. This is with the same guides as well. We use the same people for all our events. We did Scarfell, which was an absolute beast. Yeah, horrendous, but brilliant. So we did that earlier this year. We're doing Ben Nevis in August. And then a little bit later on in the year, we are doing Penny Farm. And rounding off our events for 2023 with the Edale Skyline. So it's really, really good. We love the events. The feedback is absolutely fantastic. And I think for myself and Ben, it's when people get in the car, or in some cases jump on an actual plane and travel for miles and miles and miles on their own, feeling a little bit nervous, feeling a tad anxious, and they rock up and they do it. And then they leave after spending time with a whole load of other people, basically, you know, feeling exactly the way they're feeling. The sense of achievement, the pride, the friendships made. And actually, we just have a really, really good laugh. It's ace. Can't wait for this one. Ben Nevis, 25th of August, Bank Holiday weekend here in the UK. If you fancy joining us, just drop me an email. But you'll have to do it pretty sharpish. OTIHQ. overtheinfluence.co.uk. And if you want any further information about our community, you can just head to our socials. You'll find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just look for Alcohol Free Pod, or have a look at the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back the same time next week.